Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
What you did during the commercial break, but I pulled the dumbbells out and did a set right there. Adriana, did you make a scarf or something?
No, I need a little bit more time than that.
You're gonna start getting requests. All your friends are gonna be like, I didn't know you were crocheting.
I put a picture up on Twitter if you want to see my latest project.
I'm going right there. Nick Daschle of the Oregonian joining us live via satellite. Daschle, where are you, man?
Seaside.
Ooh, set the scene. You're at the coast.
You know, I've been hanging out here all week working. There's no place better on earth when it's sunny and it's near at the beach. It's pretty nice.
Set the scene. What is the beach like? Are you seeing a lot of other people, or is it just kind of quiet and nice?
Well, I say that photo I sent you was like seconds after I took it earlier today. A lot. When I went down there, there were a lot of people down there clamming because the tide was way out and people were getting lunch. Apparently, lunch or dinner, I don't know. But it's packed down there. And it's what, Thursday? I mean, I think school's in session, but I don't know that it really matters. But it's nice at the beach right now and everybody's looking to get out. They're down here.
Love that. I want to talk to you about Oregon State, but what is the rule there? Can you go to the Oregon coast right now? Can you rent a place? What's the rules say? I'm not in tune with that.
Okay, well, as of Tuesday, at least in North Oregon, they could start renting hotels and vacation rental houses. I have a vacation rental house down here that I rent out, and I was just trying to get it ready for the summer, but in fact, I noticed Tuesday night when I walked by one of the hotel lots, it was completely packed. I mean, it was a Tuesday night, and it was completely packed. So, I mean, yeah, you can come down here. The beaches are wide open. The restaurants are open. They're pretty, socially distanced, of course, and all that. But, everybody's open for business, and they need to be open down here because the majority of the income made at least on the North Oregon coast is from June to August. That's where you get almost three-quarters of your income for the year.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com with us. You cover Oregon State. You posted a story this morning on Hamilcar Rashid. Am I saying his name right? Hamica?
No.
Hamica.
There you go.
Hamica Rashid Jr. He is in Arizona right now working out. Like a lot of the players, they're living away from campus right now. What is his status? What is his injury status? And what did you learn from him?
Well, the first thing I asked about was the workout situation because I'm always kind of curious how these guys are working out right now because there's still no real clubs open and they obviously can't work out on campus. But he said that they have a weight room down there to work out. He's working out with about 10 to 12 different players. Not one of them's from Oregon State, but the rest of them are like Arizona State, UCLA, those type of players, and they. It sounds like he's in the weight room probably 4 days a week, and then the other days he goes over to this park and runs hills and runs in a sand pit, and he posts a lot of his workout videos online. And before you think he's showing off, he said the reason he's doing it is because he's one of the leaders, and he wants his teammates who he doesn't see. He wants them to see, this is working out and, get after it, guys. So that was his reason for posting as many videos as he's been posting and working out. As far as his injury goes, the thumb he broke against Arizona State in the 10th game of the year, That was probably going to knock him out of most of spring ball, though he was going to participate in some things. But he said he's been working out full go for about the last 7-8 weeks, and he was going to go see a doctor just to get, you know, completely, you know, cleared. But sounded like to me he was good to go.
That's a big one for Oregon State. I mean, he had such a good season. I thought maybe he didn't get the credit that he deserved in some of the postseason award categories, but he's a guy they're going to count on to come back. How much better will they be on defense? Did he talk at all about being excited about maybe having some other playmakers around him?
Yeah, we didn't talk too much about that. It was just more about, you know, how they're getting through this period of time. I mean, they meet a couple times a week on Zoom, and you know, he keeps in tabs with guys that he works, you know, around his area of the ball. But we didn't talk too much about, you know, how much more the defense is going to be. But it'd be surprising if they're not better on defense, because they've got a lot of pieces back, and they've added some players too that should be able to help there. So that's, you know, whereas 2 years ago it was all offense and no defense, I think this year it's going to be, it's possible the defense might be the better side of the ball.
Nick Daschle with us, Oregon Live. Daschle, the Pac-12 schools have sort of cleared the ways, most of them, to get athletes back on campus and on time. Are they just trying to keep pace with the rest of the country? Are they doing what's right by the athletes? I know that, you know, Bill Plachke of the LA Times wrote a column kind of killing the Pac-12, saying, look, if students aren't allowed on campus, how can you have athletes on campus? Where do you see this conversation being, in particular for Oregon State?
Well, I mean, at some point we got to come out of the house, right? I mean, if we sit in the house, the country's just, the economy is going to collapse. It just is. And so we've got to start putting our toe out in the water and testing some things. And we've taken, you know, a number of steps to kind of mitigate coronavirus. And I mean, at some point you got to start taking steps toward getting back to normal life. And for these guys, normal life is playing football. And I don't fault, you know, the colleges for doing what they're doing. I mean, they've got to keep the place going, and I think they're going to do it as safely as they can do it. At least I have to take them on their word for it. I mean, now all this is going to be uncharted territory. We just don't know how all this is going to play out. But, you know, to say this is about money, well, yeah, it is. So is a lot of things in life. I think, you know, they got to make some steps toward it. And I don't think they're going overboard with what they're trying to do. I think they need to try and take, you know, small steps toward getting back to September where they can operate at, you know, maybe a 3/4 capacity on a college campus.
Athletic Director Scott Barnes, he was on with us last week, and he talked about some of the models they're running for the stadium. Now, I feel like we're going to have games in the fall. I feel like they're going to play the games. It's just a matter of who's in the stadium and what capacity. He mentioned just having season ticket holders in the stadium. I didn't press him on it, and I regret it, because I really want to know, will that include students? What do you think Oregon State should do? What's the right thing by their fan base to do? Just season ticket holders and some students, season ticket holders and 3,000 students? Like, what in your mind is the right sort of blend?
Well, I mean, I'm actually going to talk to him tomorrow, and that's part of what I want to ask him about is some of the models they're looking at. You know, is it 5,000 fans in the stands? Is it 10? Is it 20? What, you know, who gets in at those levels? I think the season ticket holders and you gotta kind of protect at least, you know, the top end ones. I mean, they're your kind of your bread and butter. But the students are your, you know, they're kind of what brings energy to the stadium. And so I think what they have now is like 11,000 seats for students, up to that many. They don't generally have that many there, but I think maybe, you know, you find a way to let 3,000 to 5,000 students in the place, and whether they show, you know, whether they're able to come in, I don't know. And then, you know, and then you figure a way to spread out the other 10,000 to 15,000 season ticket holders. I mean, I think the goal, and I'm just, I don't know the answer to this, but I'm guessing the goal will be somewhere near 15,000 to 20,000 in a stadium, you know, at some point. And that would take care of most of the students and the season ticket holders. I think the people buying single game might be out of luck this year.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they're not going to have single game tickets at all available, but you're right. They've got to have those season ticket holders in there because they're reliant on the donations. I also know that, you know, they take some student fees. I know it's not a large percentage of their athletic department budget, but if you're going to tell students, hey, we want to draw from the rest of the campus to improve Reser Stadium and we need those student fees, and I think if you're going to do that, you have to include students in some form, don't you?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I think it's just about 4% of their budget is student fees. But whether you take student fees or not, you still need students in the building because they're your future donors. They're the people that are going to spend money down the road. And if you make the experience for them in college kind of crappy, you know, why would they want to kick in money down the road when they're 30 and 40 years old? So you gotta placate the students to some degree, whether they're paying you money or not.
I think it's a great point about future donors and sort of where they rank. I'll look forward to reading your piece on Barnes because I think that's, you know, he did say season ticket holders, probably not single game tickets. And then we moved on to other things about Reser Stadium. But now that I think about it and I look back, I think the question for Oregon and Oregon State is both, all right, what's the stadium going to look like? And by the way, you know, because I kind of felt, I've talked about this, Dashiell, that, you know, I have season tickets at both. And I don't think my wife will want to go to a game. She just does not have that confidence level yet. I think there's going to be some people that are like that that'll just say, look, we're going to opt out or we'll give our tickets away. I'd rather, you know, just probably not bring the kids to the stadium. I'm going to be there working anyway. But what about, you know, the press box? What's the press box going to look like? Am I going to be sitting by you or are we going to have 6 feet apart?
Are you even going to be in there? I mean, there's things that I need to find out down the road, too, you know, like, you know, for camp. I mean, right now, I'm not sure they're going to allow anybody media in there. I don't know that I want to go 30 or 40 days without knowing a darn thing about what's going on inside practice. I don't. That's something I'll need to figure out how we can manage that in the press box. I mean, I've heard things as much as maybe only one person per media outlet, and only, you know, a certain number of media outlets total. And I mean, all this stuff is getting worked out. It's nowhere near in cement. But, you know, do media, out-of-town media travel? I mean, I've heard the radio crews may be doing games from a studio, things like that. So, I mean, there's so many things up in the air that we just don't know answers to. But and we'll get answers here in the next couple months.
All right. Earlier on the show, I said that I was going to work out, but instead I ended up eating a Rice Krispie treat. Alabama Adriana said she was going to work out, but instead she got her yarn arrived and she started to crochet. It distracted her. The last time you bagged a workout, you were going to work out, but instead, what did you do?
Hey, I walked 8 miles yesterday.
What'd you do today,
I wrote two stories, and then I went for a pretty long walk on the beach.
This is not an attack of your manhood. This is just me saying, you know, like, you were going to work out, but instead, you worked. There you go.
I feel guilty if I at least don't get in, you know, at least a good, hard 30 or 40-minute walk every day, because when you get old and fat like I am, you got to do something. I'm going to see your grandkids, so
yeah.
I got to do something. But
Don't get me started. Don't get me started on my mortality. The show will turn morbid in a hurry.
I know. You are the worst. You are the worst at that. You and Purell and all that other stuff.
Oh, man. It's not going to be surprising to me when it happens. That'll be that.
Oh, you won't be surprised. You'll be dead.
Nick Dashiell of the Oregonian. You're the best. Enjoy Seaside, man. Tell us what you see right now. Look up, set the picture so we can all, like, live vicariously through you.
Skies are, you know, like, mostly blue, a little bit of clouds, but not bad. There's quite a few people on the beach. You know, like I said, people are out clamming still. That's pretty much what I can see right now. I'm kind of off on the side, so I'm not distracted, and I can completely focus on John Canzano. So
thank you, man. Appreciate that. Nobody does that. I love you. That's why I keep bringing you on.
Oh, I bet your kids do. I bet.
Nope. If something's broken, Dad, I can't fix this.
I'm sure you've learned that you are number what, 5 in your house out of 5. I mean,
I'm the engineer. That's what I realized. I watched my 4-year-old this morning. She had a toy. It was this little Jeep, plastic Jeep truck or something, and it had a back door on it. And I watched her. The back door broke. And Mom and I were both sitting there, and I watched her very carefully as she turned around and she said, "This is broken." And she started walking towards us. And I said, "I wish I could bet right now that she's coming to me." And she came right over to me and handed it to me, and without any exceptions, I fixed it and handed it back to her, and that's probably why she brings it to me.
Yeah, whenever the kids need money, they're calling me. Whenever they need something sick or emotional, it's Mom. It's as predictable as you could get. the phone calls.
Bank of Dad.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, Nick Daschle, enjoy your day. Thank you for joining us. There it is. He's over at the Oregon coast. Maybe Alabama Adriana can crochet him like a little shawl or something, little scarf, something to put around his neck, keep him warm on those cool coastal nights. You are going to go to the gym, or you are going to work out. You're not going to the gym right now, even though gyms are starting to open. There's big lines at the gym for the places that are open. I was going to work out, but instead, fill in the blank. What was that thing you bagged your last workout for? I admitted, I was going to work out, but I ate a Rice Krispie treat. Alabama Adriana said she was going to work out, but she was crocheting. Judah Newby said he took a nap. What's that thing for you? Plus, we'll talk about Major League Baseball, their plan, the NBA, why I think the NBA thing. Look, it's a money grab, but there's no shame in that. 95% of sports these days is about money. Money pays the bills. It pays the salaries. It's about money. The Kentucky Derby's about money. The Kentucky Derby, the Triple Crown, the Olympics, the World Series, the Final Four. It's all about money. There's no shame in that. But let's not disguise the NBA trying to come back as this, well, the country needs sports. It's nonsense. We don't need sports. We'd like to have sports. Be great to have sports. But you can't tell me we could, like, the narrative would be decades later, 100,000 people were killed by the coronavirus. And also, to compound things, the NBA didn't get to finish its season. That's nonsense. It's not that important. I hope it happens. I hope it's safe. But it's just not that important. You got the bald-faced truth. Leave it here. Well, there are a lot of debate about what would happen to minor league baseball. How would Major League Baseball fit the minor leagues into their equation when it came to playing their 82-game schedule or playing 162 or whatever baseball decided? Well, baseball had some options. Do you expand the roster? Make it like a 50-man roster? Do you merge the minor leagues together? Do you create a minor league bubble and let the minor league players play? ABC options there. Instead, baseball chose D. None of the above. Across baseball, hundreds of minor league players were cut today. Lost their jobs. Hundreds more are going to get released in the next week. We're talking about 1,000 players or so that could see their baseball careers end or be delayed. The minor leagues have been devastated by this. Jeff Passan, ESPN, reporting that baseball has just decided, like, hey, normal years, they do have cuts, but the fallout from COVID-19 and what was expected to be some contraction in the minor leagues and probably the cancellation of the season, because you just can't do what they're doing in Major League Baseball. those things caused teams to release players. Now, the players were making minor league salary, $400 a week. But when you do it to dozens of players over months and months and months, yeah, it adds up. And I think once the Oakland A's did it, maybe some of the other teams went, okay, we're going to do that too. It's not so bad. The A's did it. They got killed a little bit. We'll talk to Maury Brown coming up. Forbes writer, Baseball Writers Association guy, and a Baseball America guy. Maury Brown will be joining us to talk all things baseball. I'm going to ask him in particular, too, about the A's. They are a mess. They are a mess. The Fisher family owns the Oakland A's. If you've been into one of the Gap stores, you ever been into the Gap, Judah? The Gap, is that where you go?
I try to mind the Gap, but no, I've never been.
Alabama Adriana, are you a Gap person?
They have some really good sales. I'm not even going to lie.
I love it. On yarn and stuff?
Or? Oh, come on now.
Just their clearance stuff.
Yeah,
it's interesting you say that because the owner of the A's, the Fisher family, made their money with Gap. Now their son is the majority owner of the A's. And their son gets this reputation of running the team very frugally. I mean, they're behind on their rent, $1.2 million of rent. They're late on their rent. They furloughed a bunch of their scouts and employees when other teams didn't. And they also were the first to cut the minor league players. They were like, hey, we're not taking that expense. So maybe that falls in line with how they run the game.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.